The West Live.
The West Live.
Brought to you by the State School Teachers Union campaign to fix WA's teacher shortage.
There's vaccine chaos in WA's public sector. A South West MP accused of a child sex crime made a shock return to Parliament, and one of the most notorious laptops in the state's history has landed with the Triple C and surely has a few pollies sweating bullets. So yeah, there's a bit going on in WA politics right now. And who better to take us through it than the West Australian state political editor, Peter Law. Good morning, Pete.
Morning, Ben.
Now, let's start with the vaccine mandate in the public sector. What has the state government revealed as far as the numbers concerned there?
Essentially, as we know, there was Group 1 cohort, they call them. These are the critical workers. A lot of them work in the public sector. They had to have their first dose of the vaccine by December 1. That was last Wednesday. We've been trying to find out for the past week exactly how many of these public sector workers were captured by the mandate and how many had refused to roll up their sleeves. We finally got hold of those numbers late yesterday. They've been compiled by the Public Sector Commissioner across about 80 different government agencies, departments and entities. And it shows that there are just over 1,900 public sector workers who are refusing to comply with the vaccine order. And essentially disciplinary proceedings are going to get underway very soon, and they're in all likelihood going to be out of a job by Christmas.
Yeah, wow. So what does that disciplinary process consist of?
Different for different agencies, but broadly it looks like they're getting what they're calling a two-week grace period. So I guess we're now 1 week on from that mandate deadline. So they've got another week to potentially change their mind. But given they've had 10 months, some of them, to get the jab, I'm not sure another week's going to make a great deal of difference. And then from there, those who are unable to work from home, because basically the vaccine order bans you if you're, for example, a police officer from going to a police station or to a police vehicle. You essentially can't do your job. If you are unable to work from home, they will cut off your pay, and then they will go through these disciplinary proceedings. They say that they're doing it on a case-by-case basis, which sounds quite laborious, but I guess needs must. And for the interest, I think it'll be really interesting to find out those who are able to work from home, if they have somehow managed to circumvent the vaccine order, stay on the payroll and keep their jobs and potentially try and ride it out. But I'm not sure that's in the spirit of what Mark McGann was trying to do by forcing everyone to get the jab.
Yeah, and riding it out is a pretty long-term strategy. I think the pandemic will be here for forever. And so what is your sense of how the government feels about this? So 2.5% of, you know, more than 77,000 workers is pretty good. Do you think that it's kind of what they expected?
Difficult to say, because we haven't seen Mark McGowan for a couple of days, and I'm not sure he's out again today. There's a fair bit of bad news. You might have heard we missed out on the Ashes, so we haven't seen the Premier for a few days.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a coincidence.
Some of his ministers have been rolled out, the poor buggers. Look, they try and talk it up and say, look, it is just 2.5%. Our workforce is a reflection of society, and that's absolutely true. I think it could have been potentially a lot worse than what is that 97.5% compliance. I think they probably would take that. But what I have found interesting is it does appear that it's worse in some workforces rather than others. For example, with the cops, there was fewer than 50. With the fireys, there was around about 30 unvaccinated. And then compare with those, the prison guards, who are a smaller workforce. Yesterday, we learnt there's 78 out of about 2,000 unvaccinated prison guards.
Yeah,
and
wow.
Their union, they always cry foul that they haven't got enough staff, and obviously means they haven't got enough members. But they did come out and say that that is exacerbating workforce shortages, and they in part blamed the lack of staff and the vaccines mandates contribute to that, to a riot that we saw, I believe, at Casuarina on Monday night. So I think it's affecting different employers differently.
Yeah, and now let's talk about James Hayward, the South West MP who's been accused of a child sex crime. There were calls for him to quit. Mia Davies stood him down from the Nationals Party. But he was back in Parliament yesterday.
He was quite extraordinary, actually. Parliament was a bit of a circus yesterday because of all this. So essentially, as we know, we were all shocked to learn that James Hayward, who was the Nationals MP for the Southwest region in the Upper House, he was charged with allegations of sexually abusing an 8-year-old girl that appeared in court last Thursday. Mia Davies, his party leader, essentially the party suspended him that night. The following day, he contacted them and said, "I quit the party." The mystery over the weekend was, what was he going to do about his position in Parliament? Would he sit as an independent MP to continue to receive his taxpayer-funded salary? There's been a bit of a learning experience for us all to understand what the rules are when people get charged with very serious crimes. Essentially, if you defend it in court, there is nothing to stop you continuing to take your place in Parliament and to continue to receive your salary up until the point when you are convicted. And if you are jailed for 5 or more years, then you are ineligible to be in Parliament. So he's not yet at a point where he's indicated a plea at all. The other interesting thing we learnt about the obscure rules of Parliament is that you cannot miss 6 consecutive sitting days of the Upper House. Last week he missed 3. There's another 3 this week. So we were thinking potentially if he didn't turn up at all this week, then they could start contempt of Parliament proceedings against him, which would essentially lead to him being kicked out. Now, the rumour we had yesterday was that it was suspected he would turn up at some point on Tuesday, so there was a bit of a stakeout going on by me and my colleagues in the West Australian state political team at the many different doors and entrances and exits of Parliament, trying to keep an eye on him. Unfortunately for us, Parliament sat from 2 p.m. till gone 10 p.m. yesterday, so that we were all on shifts at different locations. We didn't see him manage to sneak in. He snuck in past us, but he did indeed turn up at 7:40. He walked in wearing business attire. He didn't even have to take his seat. All he had to do is what they say is cross the bar, which is enter the chamber, nod to the presiding speaker, who then basically ticks them off, acknowledges them as having been there, and that is enough to satisfy the requirements for him to keep his job until at least the end of February when Parliament returns. And in terms of what he earns, well, he's on $168,000 base salary, and he earns about another $140,000 in allowances. Those allowances, a lot of it's meant to be spent on travel within your electorate, on your electorate, distributing information. I'm not sure how much he's going to be doing of that over the summer, but he'll still be collecting his paycheck. So I estimate his appearance was about 5 seconds in the chamber yesterday, and that probably earned him about 30 to 40 grand over the next couple of months.
Oh, gosh, good work if you can get it. Now let's talk about Phil Edmonds' laptop. It's been the holy grail for John McKechnie and the Triple C. Take us through, I guess, the history of this device and why it's seen as so significant.
Yeah, well, this all goes back more than 2 years now. It's extraordinary how long these things can take. Essentially, 2.5 years ago, the Triple C, under Commissioner John McKechnie, launched an investigation into how state politicians were spending their electorate allowances. As part of that, 2 years ago, they released a report which said that Phil Edmund had been spending his electorate allowance not on electorate duties, but on other things, such as visiting nightclubs, such as going on interstate trips with ladies that he met online, and all sorts of other things that probably absolutely don't pass the pub test. And what happened 2 years ago was that investigation essentially stalled. They were halfway through. And that's because key to their investigation was Phil Edmonds' MP's laptop. The Triple C seized it from his home. They were then compelled to hand it over to the Upper House because the Upper House deemed that there may be some material on there subject to parliamentary privilege. You know, it could be potentially emails from members of the public, it could be emails from whistleblowers. And then from there ensued what you would have thought would be the two parties would sit down and somehow come to a sensible agreement where you can figure out what's got parliamentary privilege, what hasn't, and keep the investigation going. Instead, they went to essentially war with each other for 2 years. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, who essentially said the CCC have the right to ask for that information. The upper house has the right to say that some of it may have parliamentary privilege, so sit down and work it out, which they have now finally done. And on Friday, the upper house's clerk finally handed over a laptop and two hard drives to the CCC. And the reason this has got MPs sweating bullets is because 2 years ago, when Phil Edmund was being monitored by the CCC investigators, they had him on wiretap saying that there's enough material on there to ruin people's political careers. There is a little S file, as he put it. And if anyone manages to get hold of the laptop, the best thing they could do would be to chuck it into the Swan River. So there's, we believe, about 500,000 items on there that are potentially of interest to the CCC. And, well, we'll be waiting for with bated breath to see exactly what's on there.
Yeah, well, I think the phrase used was it would effing bury people.
Yeah, so, well, I'll let you say that bit.
Yeah. So I think there's no wonder Kekkers was keen to get it. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens next. Absolutely explosive potential here. The West Australian State Political Editor, Pete Law, always a pleasure to talk to you, mate. We really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us these updates.
Thanks, Ben.